Chapter 3. Your Excuse Catalog. Quote, I know of no more encouraging fact than the unquestionable ability of man to elevate his life by a conscious endeavor. Unquote. That's Henry David Thoreau from Walden. I personally have an undeniable affinity for Henry David Thoreau's experience while communing with nature at Walden Pond in Massachusetts. I visited his home in Concord on many occasions, meditated at his desk, and actually rested on his bed to enhance this magical connection. The quote above is so meaningful to me that it actually influenced my writing of the book that you are listening to. I've occasionally been accused of being a Pollyanna, offering hope to the hopeless. Some see my philosophy concerning the human ability to elevate life to higher levels of peace, love, and joy to be naive. Being compared to Pollyanna isn't a source of discomfort for me, however. After all, here was a little girl who arrived in a town where the people were miserable and pessimistic, with doom and gloom dominating the horizon. Within a short while, the energy of Pollyanna permeated the community. Her enthusiasm was infectious, and people began to feel hope, passion, and love, replacing their despair and futility. So if I'm to be compared to anyone, I find it an honor to be viewed in Pollyannish terms. I think that many of Mr. Thoreau's contemporaries might have applied a similar label to him as well. Thoreau left the corrupt world of humankind to live in the natural world, with trees, animals, and the weather as his teachers. He discovered an ecstatic awareness of a current of life coursing through the entire planet, which led to his optimism about human potential. His message is essentially this: realize the existence of the unknowable and ecstatic aspect of your existence. Know that this divine element is an intrinsic part of yourself. Begin trusting your underlying nature by becoming conscious. In other words, excuses be gone. There are four words in this chapter's opening quote that I want to highlight: encouraging, unquestionable, elevate, and conscious. 1. This program is encouraging you to challenge patterns and feel inspired by a newfound awareness of the life hidden beneath your excuses. Invite yourself to move out of established thought patterns and realize that there's nothing standing in your way of living at your highest levels. 2. You have an unquestionable ability to eliminate excuses. They'll get up and go when they're revealed as the false beliefs that they are. There's simply no question about this. 3. You elevate your life by taking responsibility for who you are and what you're choosing to become. You can transcend the ordinary, the mundane, and average with thoughts of greater joy and meaning. You can decide to elevate your life rather than have it stagnate or deteriorate with excuses. Go beyond where you presently are. And 4, you can bring your desires to consciousness by disconnecting the power from your subconscious so that it can't continue to run your life. Your subconscious habitual mind is accessible, so unearth the excuses buried deep within you. Become conscious. Be encouraged by the unquestionable ability you have to elevate your life by a conscious endeavor. Remember these four words as you review the following list from some of the most common excuses that you probably like to free yourself from. A catalog of some common excuses. In my role as a counselor, teacher, and parent, I've heard many reasons that people use to explain an unhappy existence, and almost all of them inevitably fall into one huge category, which I call excuses. The rest of this chapter will introduce you to 18 of the most commonly used ones, along with a brief commentary about each of them. This will give you a brief primer before you go on to learn the excuses be gone method that's detailed in the rest of this program. Here they are, in no particular order. Number 1, excuse. It will be difficult. While this may seem like a supportable reason, it's clearly an excuse designed to discourage you. If you're honest with yourself about the difficulty you're experiencing with addiction, obesity, depression, shyness, low self-esteem, loneliness, or any other life aspect, you'll recognize the useless suffering you're hanging on to. If it's going to be difficult anyway, why not opt for some useful suffering? Still, the fact is that you have absolutely no incontrovertible evidence that what you'd like to change is in fact going to be challenging. It's just as likely to be easy for you to change your thinking as it is to be hard. Decades ago, when I decided to give up smoking, for example, I used excuses begone beliefs. It was encouraging for me to realize how much more difficult it was to smoke than not to smoke.
The smoker part of me always had to have a pack of cigarettes and an ashtray within easy reach, had to carry matches or lighters, dispose of ashes, deal with smelly fingers and stained teeth, earn money to pay for this disgusting habit, be careful exhaling noxious fumes, cough up nicotine residue from my lungs, buy lighter fluids and flints, and on and on and on. The truth was that continuing to smoke was the real difficulty, and changing my habit involved one simple thing, not smoking. This is true for virtually all of your habits. The belief that they're going to be hard to change is only a belief. Making something difficult in your mind before you even undertake the effort is an excuse. Nothing in the world is difficult for those who set their mind to it, as an ancient Taoist master concluded. Excuse number two, it's going to be risky. Again, this may seem like a good reason, but if you convince yourself that something involves more risk than you're capable of assuming or have the strength for, this is a poor excuse for not taking action. What is unquestionable here is your ability to choose your beliefs about the drawbacks of this endeavor. Over the years, countless people have thanked me for taking so many risks and speaking out about what I believe so fervently. I'm always taken aback by such expressions of gratitude. I've never assumed that I was being courageous by speaking my mind. Even if my opinions and statements were certain to be perceived as offensive by large numbers of people, the idea that being myself and also being willing to speak my own truth involved taking a chance never occurred to me. I don't believe you can ever be 100% certain that something will be risk-free. Holding back in silence out of fear of retribution or criticism could easily be the most hazardous behavior. Speaking from the heart doesn't always mean critical fallout. After all, about 99% of the time, the feedback I receive is positive and heartwarming. The fear involved in anticipating a risk simply serves to keep you from taking action. When you convince yourself that it's your job to avoid taking chances, you can continue your familiar habits. If you're accustomed to playing it safe by attempting to please everyone you encounter, then you're a victim of your own excuse-making. The point is that if you fear the opinions of others, or if you fear failure or success, then anything that you think or do will involve some risk. But if you're willing to live from your convictions and fulfill your destiny, then what others perceive as taking chances are simply the ways you choose to elevate your life. Even if you do believe that changing the way you think will involve risk, so what? The peace you feel because you ignored the worry of a risk is far greater than staying stuck in a belief that is really only an excuse. As writer Logan Pearsall Smith once noted, quote, "What is more mortifying than to feel that you have missed the plum for want of courage to shake the tree?" Unquote. Excuse number three, it will take a long time. Is this a valid reason or an excuse not to proceed? If you wish to elevate your life, it really doesn't matter how long it takes, does it? And this is particularly true when you're conscious that you live your life, every single bit of it, in the present moment and only in the present moment. All you ever get is now. Every thought occurs in the present moment and every change has a defining moment. Often it takes something or someone outside of you to help you realize that. An entertaining psychiatrist named Dr. Murray Banks does just that with the following little exchange between himself and a woman who's decided not to return to school because she'd be too old when she's finished. Question, he asks her. How old would you be in 5 years if you got that degree by starting now, he asks her. 49, she replies. And how old will you be in 5 years if you don't go back to school? 49, she answers with the bewildered confusion of becoming conscious of making an excuse for not elevating her life. However long it took you to create any self-defeating habit, you did it all one day, one moment at a time. There's absolutely no proof that anything will take a long time, since even the idea of a long time is an illusion. There's only now. Make this awareness a part of your consciousness. The Tao Te Ching reinforces this in perhaps the most famous line in that masterful work. Quote, "A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step." Unquote. Elevate or move on in your life, not by thinking big and in long time periods, but with consciousness focused on the present moment. Excuse number four. There will be family drama. After spending many years as a family therapist, I've seen how people often become stuck in their habituated modes of thinking because they fear the criticism that could result if they change. And I receive so many phone calls on my weekly radio show on HayHouseRadio.com from individuals who insist on remaining stuck because of this excuse. When I encourage a shift in thinking, I regularly hear things like, "I'd love to try what you suggest, but it would just kill my parents," or, "My family would disown me if I did that. It's just too big a price to pay." I've heard more than a few admit that if their spouse died, it would be an easier solution than making changes. Now, let me be very clear here. I believe in family. I have 8 beautiful children, a mother in her 90s whom I adore, and 2 brothers whom I love dearly, and I treasure my immediate and extended families. However, and this is a crucial point, living a life of your own choosing involves the unquestionable willingness to endure the slings and arrows that could come your way when you respond to your inner knowing rather than to the opinions of your family. Samuel Butler was probably feeling something similar when, toward the end of his life in 1902, he wrote, "I believe more unhappiness comes from this source than from any other. I mean, the attempt to prolong family connection unduly and to make people hang together artificially who would never naturally do so," unquote. You don't belong to your immediate family. You're a member of the human family. You don't own your children, nor are you a possession of your parents. You're not obliged to fulfill the wishes or a destiny dictated by kin. It's important to consciously know that you're here to create your music and that you don't have to die with your music still in you. Granted, this can trigger some family drama, but then again, that might be just your excuse for not following your own path. It's been my experience that I earn far more respect than reproach from my family whenever I encourage myself to live the life I want. To that end, these types of excuses need to disappear. I can't disappoint my grandparents or my parents. Why should I be the only one rebelling and wanting to move out of town, or take up a new occupation, or marry outside of our faith, or whatever else may incur disapproval and censure from relatives? These are thoughts or memes based on fears that were originally internalized in childhood, when they seemed the only way to secure a place in your tribe. Yet, what were reasons to the child you were then need to be recognized as excuses by the adult you are today. Don't let fear of family dramas keep you from changing outmoded, unnecessary, and unwanted thought patterns. Excuse number 5, I don't deserve it. In Revolution from Within, a book of self-esteem, Gloria Steinem writes that self-esteem isn't everything, it's just that there's nothing without it. I believe that lack of self-esteem is the basis for the I don't deserve it excuse I hear in sentences such as these. Nothing seems to work for me. I try, but nothing ever comes my way. I must not be worthy of it, and other people can get ahead, but I guess I'm not good enough to succeed. These excuses are based on a belief in the validity of your unworthiness. It's as if a part of you wants to protect you from what's assumed to be the unbearable pain of feeling that maybe they're right and I don't deserve it. If you ask that part of you why it's doing this, it will have good reasons. But those reasons are, in effect, lies, and functioning by their edict means that you're living a lie. You don't earn worthiness. You're equally as deserving of all that this glorious world offers as anyone else is. Believing that you're not good enough to have unlimited happiness, success, and health is a colossal fabrication that bears no resemblance to the truth of your life today. It keeps you discouraged with a well-intentioned excuse to protect you from taking action. But it isn't protecting you. It's preventing you from becoming conscious of your unquestionable worthiness. In the presence of now, this excuse has no place in your life. Excuse number 6, it's not my nature. The sentences cropping up in this category sound something like this. I've always been this way. I can't help it. I was born with these personality traits. I've never known any other way to think. And yep, it's my nature, so I'll just have to accept it. Earlier in this program, I explained my understanding of new research demonstrating that your genetic and mimetic heredity are capable of being altered. If you're willing to consciously endeavor to change the beliefs that support what you call your nature, you'll discover that it's not my nature excuse is now gone. I firmly believe that your intrinsic self is well equipped to help you fulfill your unique destiny. Just because you have no recollection of ever having been other than the way you are today, this isn't proof that your nature is unchangeable. To once again quote Henry David Thoreau, quote, "It is surprising how much room there is in nature if a man will follow his proper path," unquote. I take this to mean that nature itself will shift to accommodate you when you begin to know your unquestionable ability to elevate your life. Incorporate Thoreau's advice and begin to follow your own path. Recognize excuse logic that sounds like this. I've always been this way. It's just who I am. I'd like to change, but how can I change my own nature? It's all I've ever known, so I guess I'll just have to stay the way I am. Can you see how this kind of logic keeps you stuck in a lifelong thinking habit? The very fact that you've been a certain way throughout your life is a perfect reason for encouraging yourself with thoughts such as, I'm fed up with being frightened, shy, poor, unhappy, used by others, condescending, fat, or out of shape. It's all I've ever known, and it stems from the way I think and the beliefs I've come to accept as defining my nature. If this is my nature, then I'm going to change it, beginning right now. Now, these are notions that the philosopher Bertrand Russell could get behind. He wrote, quote, if human nature were unchangeable, as ignorant people seem to suppose it to be, the situation would indeed be hopeless. What passes as human nature is at most one-tenth nature, the other nine-tenths being nurture, unquote. So whatever you believe is your nature, allow it to be nurtured the way you'd like it to be, starting with excuses be gone. Nine-tenths of your nature has been learned and adopted as a habit, and you can coax those old habits down the stairs, one step at a time. Excuse number 7, I can't afford it. It's a rare day when I don't hear some variation of this excuse, including, I didn't go to college because it was too expensive, I haven't been able to travel because I never had the funds, and I couldn't get into the business I wanted because I had to stay where I was and earn money to pay the bills. I call this belief lame and a cop-out, yet there seems to be almost universal agreement for its existence. You originated in a world of abundance, which you unquestionably have the ability to access. Whenever you discourage yourself with thoughts that your financial situation is preventing anything from appearing, that's an excuse. If you instead decide to bring abundance awareness into your consciousness, you'll shift your thoughts from, I can't afford it, to, whatever I need in the form of assistance to guide me in the direction of my life is not only available, but it's on its way. You'll then consciously watch for the necessary funding to show up, but you'll also be reminding yourself to believe that you have the ability to use abundance to elevate your life. Encourage yourself by realizing that you have the capacity to create a space within you that's filled with peace and joy, an inner island of contentment that has nothing to do with money. Practice gratitude for the essentials of life, which are yours to enjoy virtually free of charge. These include air, water, fire, the sun and the moon, the very ground you walk on, the continuous beating of your heart, the inhaling and exhaling of your lungs, your food digesting, your eyes and ears, and so on. Be utterly grateful for all that you have naturally, which is beyond the scope of what's affordable. As that endeavor strengthens, assess what you truly like to do, where you'd like to live, and what creature comforts you desire. When I made the decision to attend college after spending 4 years in the military, for instance, I knew in my heart that money wasn't going to be the thing that prevented me from reaching my goals. I understood the costs involved, and I didn't act on my fear of shortage or what I couldn't afford. I acted on my internal knowing that I indeed was going to attend the university. This knowing prompted me to investigate financial assistance from the government as a veteran, open a savings account designated for tuition and books, talk with the financial aid people at the university, and make alternative plans to attend community college if Plan A were not to materialize. I had a certainty inside of me that the I can't afford it reasoning is an excuse that many people who aren't considered wealthy employ as a means for exonerating themselves when they need a rationalization for why they're stuck where they are in life. Oscar Wilde made this wry observation in 1891. There's only one class in the community that thinks more about money than the rich, and that is the poor. The poor can think of nothing else, unquote. I'd add that such thinking includes lamenting the fact that they'll never have money. I advise tossing out this meme and instead rewiring thoughts to connect with what's intended to manifest, regardless of your current financial status. Whatever you feel is your dharma, and no matter how hard that calling seems to be pulling you, if you maintain the belief that you can't manage to pull it off, I can assure you that you're right. To paraphrase Henry Ford, whether you believe you can afford to do a thing or not, you're right. Excuse number 8, no one will help me. This excuse really saddens me because there's no truth in it whatsoever. The fact is that the world is filled with people who would jump at a chance to help you with whatever you'd like to create. But if you hold on to a false notion that no one will be there to help you, your experiences will match that belief. If you spent way too much of your life overweight, seriously addicted, lost in poverty, or what have you, then you need to realize that the ball is in your court. No more excuses. Once that belief begins changing, you'll see help arriving, but the initial movement is completely in your thoughts. It begins with this new belief, I can access help. Begin encouraging yourself with affirmations that support and elevate your beliefs, such as, I have the capacity to create by myself if necessary. I know the right people to help me are here at the right time, and the world is full of people who would love to assist me. These will help to align you with the source of energy that's unquestionably available to your intuitive self. Elevate your confidence further with this journal entry made in November of 1843 by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Quote, if I have lost confidence in myself, I have the universe against me. Unquote. You are the universe. You originated from the invisible world of spirit. When you doubt yourself, you doubt the universal intelligence that you are, and it seems there's no one to help you. As an example from my own life, I repeat this thought from A Course in Miracles when I'm about to give a speech. Quote, if you knew who walked beside you at all times on this path that you have chosen, you could never experience fear or doubt again. Unquote. As I walk to the microphone podium, I remember that I'm an instrument for the words and ideas. My confidence trusts the wisdom that created me. In other words, I know that I am never alone. There's no one to help me becomes an invalid excuse. I affirm that all that is needed or required will be there, and I consciously encourage myself with this unquestionable belief. And help seems to come from all directions. The money I need somehow shows up, the right people emerge, and circumstances occur that are unexpectedly helpful, almost as if some synchronistic force steps in and bewilders me with the beauty of it all. I'm encouraged by my unquestionable power to elevate myself in any situation.